Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, big news today, of course, leaked, as always. So I should say maybe big news, that the United States and the White House is pulling out of the Paris Accord. This was the climate change meeting that all of the developing countries in the world got behind during the Obama administration. Historic to take on climate change. That, of course, was a big, big news. And it also was something that President Trump ran on in the campaign to say it was a bad deal. Didn't like that we were having to give money or give away things to the rest of the world and that make America great again, make America first. So today it is rumored that the United States will pull out of that agreement. Also, as you just heard from Rob Martyr, the president is going to be speaking on this topic tomorrow in the Rose Garden, 3 o'clock. He finished his tweet with Make America Great Again. So we'll find out if that is just a straight all the details that come with an announcement at the Rose Garden in the White House. Joining me now on the line, Michael Hawthorne. He is an investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune. He focuses on environment and public health. Maybe he can help us understand a little bit more about the Paris Accord and why the United States would want to pull out. Michael, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, great to be with you, Justin.
So let's talk about this. I mean, why don't we set the table in the story about what the Paris Accord is? Why don't we start with what happened and how that all came about?
Well, I think this was something that's been in the works for a long time. Globally, there have been other attempts to try to get a worldwide treaty to essentially hold a lot of countries to certain deadlines to reduce their contributions, basically fossil fuel-related contributions to driving up global temperatures, which then cause some people call it climate change. Some other people call it climate weirdness. That means that, you know, sometimes there's more rain, sometimes there's drought, sometimes it's especially cold. You know, weather changes day to day. The climate is definitely changing over time. Global temperatures are higher than they were a century ago. They're projected to speed up. That change is predicted to speed up. Some people think that the projected changes are a little too dire. Some people think they're not dire enough. So there's a lot of fear that we're going to reach some kind of tipping point where, you know, oceans start rising, glaciers really start melting, sea level rises. And, you know, if you spend the summer or spring in places like coastal Carolina or Florida, some of those places already are dealing with sea level rise and the problems that come with that to some pretty valuable vacation property. So they try to put the world on this target. I think it was important in a lot of ways because it got China, which even though you know, historically we as a country have contributed a lot to pollution that's up there in the atmosphere, causing the greenhouse effect. But China now is the number one contributor to that. And they burn a heck of a lot of coal. They've got a very fast-growing economy. They're in many ways where the United States was, you know, the early 1900s when we were burning a lot of coal and in the middle of the Industrial Revolution. They've also been acting very aggressively on clean energy. And in many ways, we're in a business competition with Chinese companies. And I think that's one of the things that you're going to hear a lot about outside of the screaming and yelling and pointing of fingers in Washington is there are a lot of business opportunities that are happening out there worldwide and here in the United States and here in the state of Illinois and in the Chicago area that revolve around different types of energy, not coal, not oil. And people are making money that way. So this could potentially affect that in the long run.
Well, Michael, let me ask you this, because it's a non-binding agreement, the idea that it's almost like a handshake deal where all the countries around the world, developing countries, got together, big ones, of course, China and the United States, to sort of, you know, hold each other accountable. That's really what this is, because the United States is, it's up to us to come up with our own individualized plan on how we're going to take this issue on. The Obama administration did that, and there was pretty aggressive standards and what they wanted to see done by 2025, 2030. And that I can understand why President Trump would want to pull back on that. There's a lot of lobbying influences in that regard. But the idea to walk away or to withdraw from something that really is just all of us in sort of having a mental agreement, it's a little bit of a head scratcher to me.
Well, I think that's a great question, and I think it runs against a lot of recent historical precedent too. It wasn't that long ago, during Ronald Reagan's administration, that the United States joined a lot of other countries to form what was called and still is called the Montreal Protocol, and that drastically reduced the use of chemicals that were destroying the ozone layer and that protects us from ultraviolet radiation that can cause cancer and all kinds of other problems. And I think it's interesting. A lot of really smart scientists and people who were involved in the Montreal Protocol have noted that at the time that was adopted in the late 1980s, we knew less about the science of ozone depleting chemicals than we do now about climate change. But that didn't stop Reagan from signing on to the Montreal Protocol. And it didn't stop the United States Senate from approving it on an overwhelming bipartisan vote. And there was an op-ed in the Washington Post recently by three former EPA administrators under Republican presidents, both the first President Bush and also Reagan, where they talk about that treaty. And they also talk about the consequences that we could be facing if we don't keep on this aggressive track of trying to reduce climate change pollution, right. Things like glacial melt. They note that Glacier National Park, one of our great national parks when it was established, had 150 active glaciers. Now there's 26 here in the Chicago area. We're already seeing flooding and basement backups and sewage flowing into the Chicago River and Lake Michigan. That was not supposed to be happening by now, but our infrastructure can't really handle the type of storms we're getting. We're not necessarily getting more rain, but we're getting it in these really intense bursts, and our infrastructure can't handle it. And then you think back not that long ago, 1995, there was this devastating heat wave that killed more than 700 people. And many of those folks were poor and elderly. They couldn't afford air conditioning. Once again, it was the built-in structure, the way the city of Chicago works. It wasn't built to handle events like that. And the scientists that former Mayor Daley hired to kind of look at this and try to help Chicago plan for a future where we have rising global temperatures and weird climate weather-related things like that, they said we're going to see more of those things in the coming decades. And whether we're prepared for that is a really big question. There's a lot of talk about that, but in an era when the federal government is pulling back on supporting communities like Chicago and supporting states like Illinois, you wonder where the money's going to come from to do that.
Michael Hawthorne's my guest. He's an investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune with an interest in public health and environment. He's covered a lot of on the idea of climate change and climate weirdness, as you mentioned, global temperatures. You know, the idea, I mean, I'm reading more about what we assume to have happened tomorrow. I mean, the media has been wrong, especially when it comes to leaks, and it's been interesting and see what.
Yeah, some people think that maybe people who are against this this Paris Treaty were leaking this to make sure that Trump doesn't change his mind.
Right.
Who knows?
Right. So but it's interesting because like I mentioned, this is to me in my mind, it's a mental handshake to say everybody's got. Everyone is keeping everyone accountable when it comes to the global developing world. In the way that we see climate change from the United States, especially from the government standpoint, this doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to roll back emission standards that were put up. We're seeing, obviously, a huge change of course when it comes to what President Obama did and what President Trump wants to do. But, there is still a lot of power in state-level government when I think of New York and California, even here in Illinois. But you think more about the progressives, California, New York, who have done much, much more at the state level to try and curb emissions and deal with the global temperature. So it's not necessarily just because we're pulling out of Paris that the United States is giving up on climate change.
I think that's a great point. And I think when, you know, for listeners who are going to see a lot of hyperbole about this, and whatever the president decides to do tomorrow or decides to announce tomorrow, we already are on a course to have a what some people call a decarbonized world, a world where we're not relying so much on old types of energy like coal and oil. We still rely a lot on oil, but we're relying less and less on coal. And I think it's really interesting. You know, one of the other things that President Trump has targeted is President Obama is what he called the Climate Action Plan. And a couple of years ago, shortly after Obama introduced that, I had gone through the different plans and the different targets that they had set for various states. And Illinois, you know, historically has been a very coal-dependent state. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of coal mining for many years in southern Illinois. Up until the 90s, most of the coal-fired power plants, including ones in Chicago, burned Illinois coal. We don't have a lot of that anymore. And interestingly enough, that the targets that were set by the Obama Climate Action Plan, Illinois was even a few years ago very close to meeting those. And so were a lot of other states, even some very coal-dependent states. And that's because kind of like what you're talking about. It's not just the Californias and the New Yorks. Look, the state of Indiana, there's a coal plant on Lake Michigan, kind of over by where the steel mills are, you know, just east of Gary. The company that owns that power plant, that coal-fired power plant, is shutting that down because there's not a market for that electricity anymore, and it's too expensive to operate.
Right.
Companies are moving toward natural gas, which is not only less expensive, it's also generated here in the United States. It's also cleaner than coal. And so it's a lot of economic decisions are being made that end up having some pretty positive environmental effects. And I don't think that's really going to change much. It might change in some certain industries that might rely on some kind of government assistance or whatnot. But if you read a lot of the economic literature, solar power, wind power, now because of economies of scale and states like Texas and Iowa, red states that have a lot of bipartisan support for clean energy, that's becoming cheaper across the board and can outcompete essentially even natural gas in some cases.
You know, and when I think about it and I hear what you just explained and read more about what it means to pull out of a deal, a global deal, it seems much more posturing in politics, maybe playing to a base or to something that you campaigned on than the truth in the way that it doesn't seem like, I hesitate to say this, but it doesn't seem that a president or an administration can really roll back the changes that we've seen in our world already taking place.
I'm fascinated by that concept, what you're mentioning there, because having written about these issues for several years now, I'm constantly coming into contact with people who are involved in enforcing or litigating or whatever different laws that were enacted, say, in the 1970s, a lot of them, so the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, kind of things that we consider a bedrock part of United States these days. And it's led to, you know, look at our lake. It's a lot cleaner than it once was. Look at our drinking water. It's a lot cleaner than it once was. It's not just in like Michigan and Chicago. It's all over the country. We breathe cleaner air. We have cleaner water. And that's because of those laws. Those laws were all passed, you know, by overwhelming bipartisan majorities. Richard Nixon, a Republican president, had a hand in almost all of those laws. He created the Environmental Protection Agency. Even when amendments to the Clean Air Act were passed in 1990, Mitch McConnell, a backbencher in the House of Representatives, voted for the amendments to the Clean Air Act. So something has changed in recent years, and in some respects, it's become kind of a if you want to become an elected Republican nationally in this country, it seems like you have to at least say something nutty about climate change or act like it's a hoax, even if you're supporting industries that end up, you know, doing things that actually fight climate change by, say, generating electricity in a cleaner way. And there's this whole cottage industry that's come up. It was originally funded and still is by a lot of the big financial backers of the modern Republican Party. It's kind of taken on a life of its own, where they try to outdo one another by saying the craziest things on Twitter or going on, you know, radio shows or Fox News or whatever else like that. But if you talk to a lot of folks, you know, in more quiet moments when the cameras aren't on, you know, they see this as a problem, and they're hearing from business leaders in their states who know that they have to do something about this. ExxonMobil, you know, is on record supporting the Paris Climate Treaty. The shareholders of ExxonMobil just voted this week to make sure that ExxonMobil does more to be clear about the financial risks of that giant oil company from climate change. You know, the Pentagon has been on the record for years. The generals and admirals have testified before Congress time and time again about how climate change is a risk to our national security and our interests abroad. So there were a lot of different diverse interests and voices who are going in another direction than certain people in the White House or certain people in the funding community in the Republican Party right now.
Well, it's
going a different direction. So it's not like all hope is lost.
It's fascinating. It'll be interesting to see what the president says tomorrow at the Rose Garden. Michael Hawthorne, investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune, who focuses on environment, public health. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us tonight and giving us a little bit better understanding of the news that was leaked today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.